Welcome to the Human Factors and Ergonomics Hub, a series of educational podcasts that showcase the connection between human capabilities and good work design, brought to you by the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society of Australia. This podcast is brought to you by Sharon Todd, a certified professional ergonomist and the current president of the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society of Australia. Today, I'm chatting with Valerie O'Keefe. Valerie is a fellow of the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society of Australia and is currently employed with Flinders University in South Australia in their Tonsley campus, exploring technology adoption in the manufacturing industry with a focus on shipbuilding. The aim of this research is to promote technology adoption and willingness to use technology. This research applies a human factors and ergonomics focus to learning from technology trials.
Tell me about your current work in human factors and ergonomics.
Yeah, I am in the fortunate situation of having a job that actually has human factors in the title, which hasn't happened too often in my career. It's usually been something else that you do while you're doing the work health and safety or whatever. So I'm senior researcher in human factors, and the work that I do is part of a multidisciplinary team. So there's another human factors professional along with myself, and we're part of a multidisciplinary team that really primarily consists of engineers. So they come from mechanical, robotics and biomedical sort of domains. And there's also a more recently some business management people whose specialty area is innovation management. So together we are working on a project with BAE Systems, Maritime Australia. And they are the organisation that has the contract for the 9 future frigates shipbuilding program in Adelaide. And so the work we're doing is really focused on trying to increase technology adoption in the shipyard for the build. So it's not designing weapon systems and so forth that go into operations, but it's really the work health and safety, quality, productivity, improvements we can make through technology adoption in the shipbuilding side of it. So that's the work we've been doing. And how that's rolled out, we're at the Tonsley site at Adelaide. So that's the old site that used to house the Mitsubishi Automotive factory, and it disappeared in, I think, 2008. And since then, it's been built into quite a vibrant technology hub with the university co-located there with a lot of startups and technology providers. So BAE is co-located with us there, and we have a site there that's called at the moment Line Zero. And that's really a simulated industrial laboratory, I guess we could call it. And it's a safe place for us in terms of not having cybersecurity concerns or highly confidential information that we have to worry about, that we can go in there and test and trial technology together. So we've been running trials on different technologies with a human factors lens.
Okay, what kind of technologies are we talking about?
So it's all about what's called Industry 4. Technologies, and that's sort of a bit of a, I guess, a generic phrase that picks up things like augmented reality technologies, robotics, data analytics and big data, 3D scanning and 3D printing, artificial intelligence, autonomous vehicles, all sorts of sensors that can connect up all this digital information. So I guess it's called the fourth industry four, the fourth industry, industrial revolution, because it's moving from the computer age that was really about being able to capture information in a digital way. But this is actually connecting up sensors and networking, Internet of Things type of approach where we can connect up all sorts of technologies to communicate digitally. And I guess we're hearing about AI a lot, and that's probably one of the big drivers, is that sort of connectivity.
So how do you use that, or what do you use that for?
So with the shipbuilding focus, so we're looking at both the shipbuilding process with the prime organisation being BAE, but we're also looking to try and influence their supply chain, because that obviously from the organisational perspective, it gets a flow on effect through that whole supply chain, makes more efficiency. So we're wanting to encourage the small to medium enterprises to integrate technology into their work as well. So the work we've been doing is running technology trials on, they're fairly generic but relevant use cases or applications to the shipbuilding. So things, you can imagine in shipbuilding, there's kilometres worth of pipes that carry all sorts of things. It's like the cardiovascular system or the digestive system in a way in the body. You know, it carries wastes, it carries fuel, it really connects up the ship. So there has to be all these kilometres worth of pipes that are built to very high specifications. So welding is really important there, that welds are to high integrity, but they're also very, very precisely aligned. So we've been looking at how we can do measurements and capture designs with pipes in particular. And so the welding that goes with that. So that's been one set of trials that we've done. We've also been interested in taking out the what we call in human factors the 3D sort of work, the dirty, dangerous, demanding, demeaning sort of work. So there's a lot of repetitive work in some of the pipe handling, the electrical work. So that's another area we've had a look at. So we would look at, we've done trials with collaborative robots. So they're a new age sort of robot, small, lightweight, force limited, and they allow people to work in close proximity with them. So they can actually coordinate tasks together, or we can get them to do one part of a task while a human does the other. There's something we've been working with. What else have we been doing? And we've got this new contraption recently that does very, very accurate three-dimensional laser scanning, and that can be exported into CAD programs and very easily with our 3D printing technologies, they can print custom-made parts. So these are great for military in general, because if you're out or mining, where you're out on a remote site, something breaks down, that you can take the part, you can scan it, you can 3D print it and have a very bespoke part reproduced quite quickly. So there's some of the applications that we're interested in trying these technologies in, but we do generic sort of relevant tasks that are relevant to the shipbuilding but can be, I guess, more readily generalised to the supply chain as well.
You mentioned a couple of very interesting things. One was the simulator lab. So let's maybe just go there for a moment. How do you use the simulator lab with these technologies?
Yeah, so it's an area of the old Mitsubishi factory that has a great big industrial crane over the top. And it's, if you can imagine an automotive plant, it's got the concrete floors. It's very cold in winter, very hot in summer. So we've brought into that, I guess they look like a series of shipping containers, and they've been put together to simulate the blocks of a ship. So as the ship is built, it's built not with the big keels and so on, like we see from the old wooden ships, but in blocks. And they'll build them in distinct blocks, and then all the componentry, the piping, the electrical wiring, everything goes into it and it gets joined up. So we've got what we try and simulate as a compartment of a block, and it contains, so it simulates like the phoretic cage, the metal box that makes connectivity difficult. It simulates some piping and valves and gauges and that sort of equipment. And we've got it built in three sections going upwards. So an under croft part that simulates a confined space, a middle section that simulates an enclosed working space, an awkward working space, and then a working at heights area where we have people climbing ladders and simulating again some of the piping that they might work, or wiring they might work at height on. So that's the sort of setup that we have. And then we also have a digital laboratory as well, where the technologies are tested and trialed. So we have there a series of different robots, including one of these collaborative, or several collaborative robots. We have different augmented reality headsets that we've been using. So things like the, some of the listeners might know HoloLens, which is a Microsoft product called an augmented reality head-mounted display, because it's worn like goggles. And people use that. We've been using it with people in the supply chain to introduce a digital work order or a digital work instruction. So people assembling, say, for example, an electrical cabinet, which is a trial we've done recently, they are getting the instructions for that assembly through these goggles or this headset, and are interacting with it either by gaze or by virtual gesturing. So it's pointing actions, pinching actions, swiping actions. And so we've been interested in how well people adapt to that. Is it efficient? Does it make help improve error performance? And is it good to use? And then some of the practical issues we have to think about too is the nature of the environment. As ergonomists, we're always trying to get people to think about the system holistically. So it's not just about the technology and the user, it's the space that they're working in, and it's also the organisational context or the work design context that that task that we're looking at fits into. So we look at those sorts of questions. It's quite diverse things that we look at. But important in solving some of these challenges with the shipbuilding.
Tell me more about the work design context.
Yes. So the sort of trials that we have been doing so far, I tend to think of them a bit like sprint trials. So we might spend maybe 3 to 4 months on running a trial. So there'll be a design component to that, where we consult some subject matter experts. So it might be welding or piping, as examples we've done, electrical. So we need to understand the nature of the design in the shipyard, and therefore the sort of task demands from that that work. We design a short but relevant and task that replicates that work at some level. And when we choose the technology that we think can solve some of the problems inherent in that work. So, for example, the cobots was something selected to show a precision task, a tracing the linings of doors that they were going to use. And that was one trial, but it could be extrapolated to other very precise work that's repetitive. So we design the task and then we bring through participants. We pilot it first, of course, but we start to bring through participants. And we try and select a good range of participants that represent the range of workers who would be doing that task. So we try to go from some novice ones to some experienced ones. And they're all volunteers and they come in and work through the task. So we try and limit the task time to about 1.5 hours because that's an economical time to bring people off the line. It's not too long to keep them away from work. It allows us to do a task that may be 40 minutes, which is a good indication of the positives and negatives of that work. And it means that we can run through about 30 to 40 participants, which is the number we'd like to have go through. So that's how we do the trials. We run them. We get feedback from the participants. So the sort of things that we measure from the human factors side, we're interested in things like workload. So people will be familiar with the NASA TLX, the Task Load Index. So that, for those not familiar with that, that's got six elements of workload that we look at, including physical, mental, time, pressure. They are the task-specific ones, and then the person-specific ones are effort, their satisfaction with their performance, and their level of frustration they've experienced. So that's a really, we choose very simple, easy to apply measures because we also want to encourage the organisations we're working with to do some of this sort of measuring of performance when they are looking at their own trials. So it's that very human factors or work health and safety way of thinking that we like to try and impart some skills as well. So we use simple, quick and efficient things, but also some technology to measure as well. But we measure workload, we measure system usability score, which is a 10-item scale that just asked a lot of fairly general focused questions about how people experienced the task from a usability point of view. And those two tools are quite useful for allowing us to compare. They give us numbers so we can compare with that. And we can also zero down a bit into some particular areas. Is it more mental effort? Is it more physical effort? Was the frustration really high? And then we support that with qualitative because that helps us pinpoint the how and the what. Quick measures, we get the people to do the task. We debrief them. They do the survey on laptop. And we also measure things within the technology, things like we would traditionally do errors made, productivity time. We might measure accuracy. Say, for example, when we were doing the task looking at pipe measurements, whether they could align the pipe within a plus or minus 1 degree. So those sort of measures, very traditional, quick trials that give us an indication of whether this technology is feasible for this sort of work. We're actually trying to understand that task level and that human interaction level. So we sort of have to extrapolate a bit from what does this mean for a whole job. So we look at the mental work effort and those sorts of indicators. When we debrief, we ask them some questions around very, very broad questions so that we draw anything from them they want to tell us. So I'll usually start out with, how did that go for you? Tell me about it. And then we might ask them some specific questions about, do you think that would be easy to learn? What sort of skills do you think that would require? How confident are you? Would you feel about this sort of work? So that helps us get into understanding their work domain better and getting their perceptions on what makes for satisfying work. So are there barriers maybe for this technology in your work? So the work we've done so far, we've only been able to make broad recommendations around the work design. So it's around what sort of skills might be needed, how the different types of demands would need to be balanced across the job, for how long can someone perhaps wear a HoloLens augmented reality headset at one time. So we're trying to educate the workplace about thinking about these questions, and then as they start to implement, to be engaging at that level. We also wrote a more theoretical guide on job design, skills and job design, to support that. That's a quite generic document that just helps explain what job design is about and why different elements of job design are important. So that's the things we all know, things like management leadership and vision, work health and safety, social support, different task factors like complexity, task identity, and skills, of course.
Just go back to the cobots for one second. You said that the cobots can work alongside people, and you were talking about welding at the time. So are the cobots welding?
That's the aim. We're not there yet. But there is a piece of technology called Soldermatic, which is a digital training tool for welding. And so we are actually, our BAE counterparts, because they also have about 40 engineers working on what they call technology and development as opposed to research and development. And they are doing some trialing with this Soldermatic with a cobot. And so the idea is, you know, as we hear in human factors, the old adage of about 10,000 hours to get expertise, if they can get apprentices, for example, working on this welding with the Soldermatic, because it's a digital replication that gives a lot of feedback on the weld quality. If they can get their basic skills and coordination up on that, they're then ready to go on to training in the field with real equipment and real metal. The training that they do on the digital system would never be accepted for signing off on their competencies, but it does fast track them to getting to the real equipment and then able to build their competencies a lot more quickly.
Okay, so you're using this technology for design and you're using it for training and competencies.
Mm.
Is there anything else that, I mean, that's huge, but is there anything else that you use it for?
Well, the value of the technology ideally is to improve job design and through that, the quality, safety, productivity. So it needs to have a really genuine business benefit. So we're sort of, it's an enabler to that endpoint, really. So we are trying to look at the business cases for these as well going forward. We haven't done much of that yet. And that's why we've, you know, I'm from Adelaide and working on the current HAFISA conference committee. That's why we've highlighted Patrick Newman to be a keynote for us, because he is someone who's very skillful and one of the few human factors researchers I've been able to identify that has tried very hard to present a business case for human factors and ergonomics in these sorts of industrial manufacturing settings. So we're really looking forward to engaging him on these sorts of questions around the work we've been doing as well.
I'm just going to go back a step as well. You talked about a number of technologies, the robotics, which you've talked about. You've mentioned a little bit of the virtual reality or AI. You mentioned sensors and big data. So let's just jump to big data. What is big data?
Well, this is not something
that the human factors team have worked on, and it's not something we've done a lot on yet, but that's going to be the big driver for how, and across industries, not just manufacturing and so on, healthcare, retail, transport. So the sensors have been around for a while because we've had automation for a while, but the sensors are getting more sophisticated and being able to put sensors on different bits of equipment in a manufacturing process means that the data can be harvested from them and fed into AI and algorithms so that a lot of analytics can be developed from that, that can be interrogated using AI. And from that, we get real-time reporting. We get much, you know, that enables us to be more responsive in troubleshooting and predictive maintenance and things like that. So that's something that we haven't looked at yet, but that's one of the big drivers of the connected, you know, connectivity and digital systems that, and we're all hearing about the different sorts of AI, like chat GPT-3 and the subsequent ones that are able to harvest all of this data from multiple sources. And it's really going to revolutionise production planning, predictive maintenance, troubleshooting. You can identify that an error has come from this particular machine or this particular operator, which has a whole raft of issues associated with it as well. So that's not something that we've been working on yet. We've been a bit more focused on the probably the big ticket things that injure and harm people, like the repetitive work and the high priority things for improving quality and productivity. But these are things that are coming. We have done a little bit. Our engineers have done a little bit on things like digital twins, which is associated with the big data, where you're able to have a virtual replication of a living system and you're able to predict and make changes to the virtual system before you implement it on the physical system. So you can test the effects without jeopardizing your production. So we've our engineers, our robotics engineers, a very smart young man, and has done a digital twin of our laboratory with the cobots in it, and he can make changes to the digital twin that then can be transferred on to the cobots to demonstrate that. That's something else that our lab does. We have regular fortnightly tours for interested people to come and view the sort of work we're doing. So when they come to the digital transformation laboratory, they see that digital twin in practice. We also have a virtual reality cave, what we call a cave. I think its brand name is actually Igloo, but it's actually a very small room that you can step right into, and wearing headsets, you can experience a virtual reality environment. So we've got one in there at the moment on the ship, the one of the frigates, and the sort of helicopters coming in to land on it and so on. And it's very compelling. But from a human factors point of view, I can't wait to get to use that on looking at physical spaces. So I know in Adelaide, when we built the so-called new Royal Adelaide Hospital, there was a lot of issues around rooms that were too small or flow-through points that were not big enough or whatever. They could all be replicated in this thing called a virtual reality cave. So we've got all sorts of different things that we're only just starting to scratch the surface of what we can do with them.
You mentioned repetition. Are you able to talk about any projects where you've been able to improve the repetition or reduce the repetition?
I can talk about the cobot one. So the cobot one was our very, very first trial. We've learned a lot since then. There could have been some better study design to improve that at the time. But the idea of the cobot trial, cobots are of interest in manufacturing because they can take out this repetitive physical activity. They can be trained to do repetitive tasks. One of the challenges with shipbuilding is that we're building something that takes maybe 3 years to build, and it's got millions of very individual parts. So cobots are fabulous for high volumes of high frequency components. We have very low frequencies of components that are very individual, but thousands and thousands of them. So what we call high mix, high volume, low mix is the traditional manufacturing. There's lots of them, but there's not very much variability. Shipbuilding's the opposite way around. So cobots may not be quite the panacea people were thinking because of that. But the trial we did, we looked at doing a precise gluing task. So the cobot had to follow a path. And they replicated the task gluing with a cobot with a task that was gluing manually. Yeah, so we're replicating the task that was done manually. We used ruler, traditional good old ruler, for those not familiar, rapid upper limb assessment method to measure that. And it showed that the cobot improved performance over the human by very significant degree. So that's the only trial we've done there. So it was repetitive work and the robot showed a benefit, but it wasn't indicative of what we would see in the shipbuilding where it's high mix but low volumes. So it hasn't solved too many problems in replacing people yet, because that is one of the big concerns too, that robots are taking over jobs. And our experience to date and what the literature is showing to date is that's not likely to happen anytime soon. They will augment work rather than take it over, or where there are reductions in people doing particular jobs, they will tend to create new jobs that will be taken up elsewhere in the organisation.
What is the feedback like from the people who you're working with? So given that you've got workers in working with the potential robotic line, generally what is their feedback and do they like involvement in these kind of projects?
That's a really good question. The sort of people we have come to our trials, they all come voluntarily. They are from the shipyard or from the supply chain. They get invited to come. So they're coming of their own accord. And a lot of them, I guess because they're self-selecting, mostly they're curious, mostly they're keen. They've heard about it. And some in the shipyard will say, oh, we've been talking about this for such a long time. Bring it on. We want to see it. We want to see it happening. So most of our participants so far have been curious and willing to try the technology. And then when they do the task and we debrief them, they will say, oh, you know, this was good, but that wasn't good. Overall, I enjoyed doing the task, but I don't know how it would go for 8 hours a day. They can see some benefits, but they're thinking in a good human factors way about the whole job. Some of them raise some of the questions that you just did about, you know, or the idea of robots taking our jobs. They don't see that by and large as something that they're really concerned about, except in one task that we did, which was the pipe alignment task, because OptiTrack system, which is a camera-mounted system that triangulates beams to give you very accurate measurement, it really simplified the task so much that it was sort of felt like a meaningless task, even though to do it manually is a highly skillful task. So they were a bit concerned about this diminishing their skill and diminishing their work enjoyment and then potentially their job viability. Mainly they did recognise, though, that we would still need highly skilled welders and pipe aligners or boiler makers to do this work, because even though it was welding and so forth, you still needed a good welder to know what faults had gone into this and how to fix it. So there's quite a good understanding of some of the issues there. But the most recent trial we did was a digital work order with the HoloLens, and they were using that to action a digital work order and it was integrated, a HoloLens headset with a cobot, and they activated an inspection by the cobot by staring through the HoloLens. That one we took to the shipyard. We actually got into the shipyard, which was quite a feat, in a contained area at the shipyard. It's very difficult to get in because of cybersecurity. So we were bringing people offline, and a couple of them said to me, a bit nervous about this computer stuff, I'm a tradie. I don't even know how to use a laptop, and I'm a bit nervous about this. So we had a few like that, three or four, went through, did the trial. I remember one very vividly at the end when I said to him, how did that go for you? He was momentarily stumbling for words, and then the two thumbs up came up and he looked at me and he said, wicked. Wicked. So we've had all of those sorts of reactions. And one of the things we do aim to do, we want to give these technologies a fair trial when we run them through a trial, but at the same time, we want to set it up to encourage the participants to have a positive experience. Part of our remit is about encouraging technology adoption, making sure that people have a positive experience with it at their first encounter so that they're willing to come back. They can identify a few bugs and things, but, yeah, this has got potential. That's the sort of thing we'd like them to experience.
How do you choose the task or the job or the line? How do you choose the thing that you're going to look at?
So the things so far, they've been jobs that the organisation has probably picked. They've been high priority things like, we've got all this welding to do. We need to look at whether we can train people faster to do with this Soldomatic tool, or we can get the alignments done faster if we use this OptiTrack visual system. They sort of highlighted those use cases that they felt would be most useful to them as a business. And in terms of fast-tracking the shipbuilding process. So they're starting at that level as what's going to be the high-priority tasks and what would be some of the technologies that might match to those questions or challenges that they've got.
So when you select a task or when they select a task, are you given the opportunity to observe that task being done as it currently is done?
No. See, so this is so when we started this work back at early 2020, it coincided with COVID, as we all remember. So that did slow things down a bit and create some complexities. So some of the complexities we had were in timing the development of the shipyard and the development of the design coming from the UK, things like that. So that did make it challenging to actually go and see some of these tasks because they were being done in the UK. And so we had to learn what we could and replicate them as a generic, relevant sort of task related to that problem. So now that process has moved ahead quite a lot, and there's very close collaboration with the shipbuilding in the UK, and much more activity also going on at the shipyard, because the shipyard was also being built at that time. It wasn't really fully functional, and all they were doing at that point were cutting steel.
So are they the greatest challenges for you, or have there been other really big challenges in this project?
So yeah, those things have been a lot of challenges. But another thing that we as human factors folks would understand is the whole issue of culture and organisational culture. So for us, we were thinking about the human factors is that we were doing meta human factors on human factors, because we were bringing together not only a multidisciplinary team of human factors people, and the two of us are trained in psychology, applied health sciences, I'm trained in work health and safety, some business management, and we were brought together with the engineers who have very different ways of thinking and looking at problems. So their way is to be very quantitative, very objective. We have completely different languages. So we had to learn to work together at that level and to find shared language that we were talking about. They keep telling us that, well, how do you measure that and to get a hard number? And we're saying, well, qualitative is very important. So that sort of thing. Then you're bringing together two organisations, a university and a big prime that's an international organisation. It's an engineering organisation, and universities, well, I don't know how we best describe universities. They're very multifaceted beasts. But we had things that we had to do, like ethics. When you run a trial, you have to look after all your participants. You have to have full disclosure with them. You have to brief them. You have to get informed consent. You have to have all your risk assessments lined up. You can't harm them in any way. So that takes time. And this prime, the culture was, they're doing research as well, but their culture was, as they kept telling us, think big, start small, go fast, fail early. And we were saying, well, hang on, you might throw something perfectly good out because you haven't looked at it properly or for long enough or given people an opportunity to learn about it or overcome some anxieties or fears, you know. So it was really challenging from the cultural piece, bringing this all together so we could actually work together. So that was another challenge, which has worked out really quite well now, but that's 3 years down the track nearly.
And what's been your favourite bit about this project?
What was really wonderful was when we took our last trial physically to the shipyard, because it's actually incredibly difficult to get access to the shipyard. And for example, if you're running a technology trial that runs on Wi-Fi, the pipe shop that we were in is a huge building, very noisy, very busy and hot, has no Wi-Fi. So this is a really big barrier if you are wanting to take technology into something very traditional, like a shipbuilding. It's very traditional sort of manufacturing, but also very potentially very high tech. But we had no Wi-Fi, so we had to go through a lot of hoops to get Wi-Fi in that building to enable us to do the trial. But getting in and out, just the security and the taking equipment in, then you've got the challenges of taking people offline from their production for an hour and a half. We had to be escorted everywhere we went, for example. So to take this to the shipyard and run 36 people through it in a few weeks was fantastic. To get them off the line in their PPE, because they have to wear hard hats and the full PPE. The HoloLens, we could not wear the hard hat with. So there's a lot of practical things to do before some of this technology can go into the shipyard. We did look at a design called a Trimble, which is a hard hat with a HoloLens fitted to it. We piloted that and we discarded that after two pilot participants because it was heavy, it was hot, which is not so much a concern. Like we know with welding and the air supplied units that, you know, that's something people have to cope with. But the visor had no adjustability. The computer components at the back bored into the mastoid processes, the little bones behind the ears. Weight distribution was really poor. So when you bent forward, it either fell off or the visor moved down. So we had those sorts of issues, but we did take it to the shipyard and test it. And what we were able to do there is not only bring in 36 really, really representative participants, but we were also able to bring the managers and the directors out of their offices down and do some show and tell sessions, some what we call come and try sessions. And that generated so much discussion and ideas. It was magic to watch. And it really is that beauty of participation and engagement that we do so well in human factors. When we do it well, it works incredibly well. And one of the magical things from my perspective was the head of the shipyard came to one of those come and try sessions and he said, we must get the customer down here, the customer being the Navy. And 2 days later, several Admiral, several Commodores all came in and had a demonstration of this technology. And so it really did boost the whole agenda for how we're going to get technology implemented in this industry. So that was, for me, the biggest thing. All the good human factors came together. All the work that we've been doing had come together.
Thanks for joining us at the Human Factors and Ergonomics Hub, brought to you by the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society of Australia, where human-centred design really matters. If you like this podcast, make us your favourite in your podcast app. We look forward to chatting with you next time.